We obviously didn't have very much money to spend, so we couldn't exactly hire huge cranes and lights, etc. Most of our camera operators owned their own cameras, and I also borrowed one off of friends. We had a homemade jib and dolly track we used, rarely, and the odd glide cam and fig rig. We did have a few shots that required lights, so we scraped together what we could from crew members. We did have to hire large lights once or twice. Costumes did take a large chunk of the budget, either buying materials and making things from scratch or buying items on eBay and adapting them. Many of the costume items were constantly recycled and mixed together to create different looks. Props were also a similar issue. Hey, 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 I'm Danny J.
And I'm Joel N.
I'm Trevor D.
I'm Jovi.
And we are...
Keep on Talking!
Hell yeah, we are.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to see you're all here, because I can see you.
Yeah, we can see you.
We're lurking somewhere in the shadows.
Yes. Today we have, we're doing film again today, so we're going to have our friend Joe Vasky on. How's it going, Joe Vasky?
Pretty good. Yes. Whenever I'm on, you know it's about film in some way.
Right.
Shape or form.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have you on to talk about something else sometime. You like a lot of other things, too.
No, not really.
No. Well, yes, like we said, today we're doing film. We're doing fan film reviews today. Yay!
Yay! Woo! We've had some suggestions of doing some of these for a while. We're finally going to review them for you.
Yeah.
Three, to be specific.
Yeah, today we'll be giving our take on three Lord of the Rings fan films made since the original Peter Jackson trilogy, which was released around 20 years ago.
God, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I would like to point out that originally we had planned on only doing two,
mm-hmm.
but in viewing those two, we found a third.
Found an extra one.
We just had to add it in.
And boy, did we, yeah, we had to.
Yeah, I'm the one that we found might
really
be
badass,
my favorite.
Yeah.
Really badass.
Yeah.
But you've even found more since then, right?
Since then, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So we might have to do this again in the future.
We might have to do
Who
a
knows?
Part two, yes. So what is a fan film? Let's give a brief description. Joe, why don't you give us a description?
A fan film is a film or video inspired by a film, television program, comic book, or video game created by fans rather than the source's copyright holders or creators.
Right. So it is legally a gray-ish area mm-hmm. making these films.
Kind of like parody law?
Fair use is, yep, one of the things, yep. So the legality of fan films, they vary based on location, but in most cases, fan films are considered fair use, especially if the project is not made for profit.
Gotcha. So as long as they're not profiting off it, you're not selling something under the name of this thing.
Right.
You're usually okay.
Mm-hmm. And many fan film makers are actually on pretty good terms with the copyright holders. They either have a agreement officially or a uneasy existence with one another. Which one of them is that status? One of the films we'll cover today, actually. The Hunt for Gollum.
Oh.
And I think there's something, going back to the profits, I think there's something really cool about these movies because Danny and I talk about this a lot, but there's we're both really off-put and disturbed by some of the films today that are just made to either make money or retain IP rights.
Oh, that's so gross.
Madam Web, I'm looking at you.
The fucking Looney Tunes movie? That's going on right now. Don't even get me started on that shit.
It seems like there's a lot more of those kinds of movies nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I think everyone here believes that films are art and art should not just be about the money. And what was refreshing about these is that you can literally see the love and passion that everyone involved in the production has for Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. It's really hard to make movies.
And yes, it is.
The people who made this are not making any money off of it. They're just, it's for the love of the game. So that's mm-hmm. really cool.
Right. One of these actually that we're going to watch had 400 people do free labor for it.
That is some real love.
Yeah.
For the source material. Like yeah. That's goddamn.
Yeah. It's a testament to what a little bit of money and a whole lot of love can do.
It's a lot of people to not have to pay.
Yeah,
they just to release something that is also not going to make anything.
Yeah, right. Just doing it for the love, dude.
Impressive.
Well, let's get to these films. There's three of them. First one, 2009, Born of Hope, also known as Born of Hope, The Ring of Barahir.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. It's got an extended title.
It got an extended title, yeah. And this, of course, chronicles the story of Arathorn II and Gilraen the Fair, the parents of Aragorn.
And the second one we've got is The Hunt for Gollum, also from 2009. And this one tells the story of Aragorn trying to find Gollum before Sauron at the behest of Gandalf, just before the War of the Ring. So this is prequel right up before the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
And then lastly, the bonus film that we found.
The bonus film.
The bonus one.
The Horn of Gondor, which was a 2021, so very recent.
Very recent.
Yeah.
And this one tells the story of Borondir, who is seeking the help of Eorl the Young in Gondor's war against Balkoth in the middle part of the Third Age.
Yes, which is really fucking cool.
Yeah.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it, guys.
Deep cut. But they, exactly. It's great.
In a big obviously, I hear, obviously, all of these films are heavily, heavily influenced by the Peter Jackson trilogy.
Yes.
Funnily enough, though, all in different ways. And we're going to try to avoid constantly pointing out all the similarities, but fucking knowing us here, it's going to happen a few times at least. So,
oh yeah,
bear with us. Another thing I'd like to bring up, this is just for me. It's known that I have a love for film, right? Most people would think this means I watch a lot of great films. This is true. However, I have a special fascination with terrible movies, right? And I have a lifelong fascination with washed-up action star Steven Seagal.
I feel like he'd be offended if he heard you say washed-up.
Oh, yeah. I hope he listens to the fucking show. Oh, my God.
I think his non-washed-up period was very short.
Very brief.
And he quickly entered into washed-up
status. It was three films, Above the Law, Marked for Death, and Hard to Kill. Those three were the ones
the heyday of Seagal.
Right. But yeah, those who aren't aware, he made a few good movies in the early 90s, but later moved on to making notoriously horrible direct-to-video action films. And I have seen, I think, 17 or 18 of these movies altogether.
That many?
There's 30.
That many exist?
There's like around 30, and I've seen like 17 or 18 of them. I forget what my count is right now.
Didn't you and Thomas go through like a phase where you guys just started acquiring a bunch of Steven Seagal movies?
We thought it would be funny. We got kind of fucked up one night, and we were on eBay. And thought it would be funny to buy like 30 Steven Seagal movies.
All in one collection or separately?
Yeah, and they came wrapped up in a taped up diaper box.
What the fuck?
Okay. Yeah.
Just somebody's dirty treasure trove of
Steven Seagal movies, yeah. Yeah. So during this thing, I will be doing what I call the Steven Seagal litmus test. I will be comparing all these micro-budget fan films to Steven Seagal films in their various aspects.
Nice.
And this will prove to show both how great films can be with little effort and money, or with little money, rather, and how little effort Steven Seagal puts into his movies.
None of these have a sitting takedown, though.
No, none of these have a chair takedown, which almost every Steven Seagal... He notoriously refuses to stand for shots.
Jesus Christ.
Yes.
The sitting action shots.
Yes, chair takedowns. There's one in almost all the great Steven Seagal films.
Chair foo.
Okay, let's get right into it, guys. Enough of Mr. Seagal.
Yeah, let's jump into this first one.
Okay, first one, Born of Hope, 2009.
So this one was the longest of the ones we watched, and it also had the largest budget, so it was about 71 minutes and 24 seconds, so that's what, an hour and 11 minutes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then the budget was just over $30,000. So that's a decent budget for a fan film, especially for nobody profiting off anything. No one's getting paid.
It's not nothing, that's for sure.
It's probably pretty good for 2009 too.
Yeah.
And like we said, this is also known as Born of Hope, The Ring of Barahir. And it premiered at RingCon in 2009 and was streamed free on Dailymotion and later YouTube. Y'all remember Dailymotion?
Yeah.
Aww.
That brings me back. Yeah, all of these, all three of these movies, by the way, I believe you can find on YouTube. That's where we watched.
Yes, totally free on YouTube. Check them out. Definitely check them out.
Yeah, Born of Hope sitting at, what, nearly 50 million views?
50 million views.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
No, that's a number. That is a successful YouTube film.
Yes.
Fan film.
And it's directed by Kate Madison, And she also actually plays the character of Elgarine in the movie, who is a non-canon character, but not a bad one at all.
No, and she kills it.
Yeah, she actually started acting at the age of 4. She originally went to school to get a degree in zoology, but decided she would do art as a career instead. And not to shit on the sciences, friends, but good for fucking her. Round of applause.
She
joined the arts. Do the arts for work, everybody.
I mean, animals are cool, too.
Animals are fine.
Hey, we're glad that she stuck with this here.
Oh, hell yeah. We wouldn't have Born of Hope, right? And yeah, she formed the company Actors at Work in 2003.
Nice.
And she's done other short films, Into the Darkness, The Horseman, and the one that Joe said you checked out the trailer for, Ren, The Girl with the Mark, which is a web series.
Yeah, I want to watch. And some of the actors from Born of Hope are in Ren.
Oh, no, so shit. Okay.
Yeah, we should check it out sometime.
We should check it out.
It looked kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the screenplay was written by Paula DeSanti under the name Alex K. Aldrich. And they worked on Ren, The Girl with the Mark, with Katie Madison as well. Or Kate Madison, rather.
So our plot synopsis for Born of Hope. So Born of Hope tells the story of the Dunedain of the North just before the birth of Aragorn. It chronicles the story of Aragorn's parents, Arathorn, and Gilrain, falling in love during a tumultuous time for the Dunedain.
Yeah, let's get everybody's initial reaction. Just a little blurb on what you thought. Joel, why don't you go first?
Sure. So this one was also, like I said, the longest one.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost feature film length.
Yeah.
And it was really impressive what they did with it all. I thought it was really good. There was clearly a lot of love that went into this film, and I've never seen such a thorough picture of Dunedain life
right.
anywhere. I feel like everyone, as Danny says, shafts the Dunedain a lot.
They do.
And, I mean, they even go so far as to, like, name drop the Kingdom of Rudaur, which is just cool. It's cool. Fun cut. I really appreciated that. And it's also a great story straight out of the lore. And it doesn't really get much attention, you know, outside of it existing somewhere deep in the lore. So I just really liked this story. I thought it was good.
Hell yeah. Trev, what do you think?
So, I thought it was a pretty cool Tolkien adaption. I think, like we were talking about Peter Jackson, it really captures those vibes.
Sure does.
I think the cast seemed to fit their characters. They seemed like believable characters. And, you know, they fit in with everything that was going on, so it was nice and, like, immersive. And the fight scenes were frantic and pretty cool. But honestly, I didn't really care for the Elgarain love story. I did really like the character, though.
Yeah, there was. It did suffer from a shoehorn love story, which we'll get into a little bit later here. Joe, our guest, what do you think, bud?
This was my favorite of the three, I think, and I think that was mostly due to the story. I really liked the love story between Arathorn and Gilrain. I thought it was well done and believable, and it wasn't. I don't know. It's so easy to just make really cringe love stories and
it sure
movies
is,
especially in a fan film, but I thought it was really well done. And I also really loved how ultimately it was just a really sad story about the end of the Dunedain. Like, it ends with them just kind of scattering, basically. And
It's pretty bleak,
pretty and, pivotal point in their history.
I like the fights. I wish they were a little bloodier, but I mean, that's gonna probably always be a complaint of mine. And then I also didn't love the Elgarain and Dereborn love story, but the acting was good from them.
Yeah, I think these guys said it pretty well. So I'm just going to say I thought it was really, really cool. I especially appreciated it as a Dunedain head. It's definitely a must-see, especially if you are a Dunedain head and you appreciate the Peter Jackson trilogy at all, or if you just love Aragorn too. It's nice to see these things on film.
Oh, one thing too I was going to say, I really liked how they show like the village, and they always made sure to have extras in the background doing just like daily life things.
Yeah.
So that really made it feel like...
It made it feel lived in.
Lived in. Yeah. Everything felt very
lived. They definitely set the scene very well.
Authentic, I think, is a word that comes to mind when you think of this film. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into the discussion of this film. So like Peter Jackson influence, right? Let's get into it. In Born of Hope, there's some Peter Jackson influence right off the bat.
Yeah. I love the first thing. There's a ring being cut off of a hand.
Yeah, in the prologue.
Or in the prologue.
Yeah. And it also has the Peter Jackson tradition of having a cool expositionary dialogue in the prologue. It's voiceover.
I love that PJ tradition.
Yeah. And they do this Blood of the Dunedain river water analogy like poem, and it's really cool. I really liked it. I'm pretty sure it's original. I think I saw a person listed for it in the credits, so I think it is original.
But it starts out with an unknown female narrator, kind of like the Fellowship does with Galadriel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved that it ultimately turned out to be the narrator turned out to be Gilraine telling this whole story to baby Aragorn.
Yeah.
And I mean, the actress also does a very good job narrating the story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought it was just a very fun little clean tie-in.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't notice until the end. Mm-hmm. That it was her, because I mean, her voice.
It was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah,
and then it's all of a sudden, oh, you connect it.
Yeah, some more direct Peter Jackson influence. They use the man flesh line straight up, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, straight up. I love the man flesh line. Yeah. Honestly,
gotta have it, right? They had it in Rings of Power too, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. You just can't help yourself, right? Yeah, the end credits are very much like the Peter Jackson ones. They're like drawings of the cast members on like old-timey parchment. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
I liked the song too. I don't know if that was an original song.
I think it was. But I think all the music was original.
Okay. Yeah, I like the song.
Yeah, all the music for all of these I think was original.
I think if I remember right too, I think there's somewhere you can download the soundtrack for free as mm-hmm. well. Very if cool. you're really interested in that. But overall, yeah, it's an impressive venture. I think we'd all agree.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely not what I was expecting when you guys said we were going to be watching fan films.
Right.
Like, yeah. I was picturing some level of theater
right.
in my head, I think. And mm-hmm. then this turned out to be way more than that.
Yeah, and it's almost feature length as well. Like, this is a...
Yeah, honestly, yeah. You could put this on TV and throw some commercials in and it would fit in.
Right, totally. Everything really about this film is solid. There's no real huge gripes that any of us really had.
No.
I mean, even down to, like, let's look at the things that do look really good. The CGI, even. That's something you have a gripe with almost fucking everything, right? These, especially in this era, 2009.
Yeah, absolutely. And they had a scene in this where we run into a troll.
Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
But it looked really good, especially for a fan film. That troll looked spot on.
Yeah, it looked almost as good as the trolls in the Peter Jackson trilogy.
It really did.
Yeah.
It surprised me. I mean, I wasn't expecting any CG.
Yeah, let alone CG.
Bam, a troll. Like, the stuff in the beginning when he's like, when Arathorn is traveling, mm-hmm. like, clearly some of that was like CG, like him going through the mountains or standing still next to the mountain wall. But a troll? No, was not expecting that.
And one of the things I need to commend this film about is like they only use CGI when they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And CGI is only a complement to a good story, acting, set design, editing, and cinematography. It's not the center of attention like many films. Looking at you, Michael Bay.
Trevor said, the only thing that was kind of iffy to me was some of the green screen stuff. But mm-hmm. overall, it was way more impressive than I was expecting.
Totally.
Yeah, the cave troll looked better than some of the CG in Hollywood movies. And I think that also goes to just people. I mean, you can literally see how like passionate they are about it, because that must have taken a lot of time and energy.
Oh, it had to have, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was a lot of love was put into the score.
Oh, yes.
The music in this film it was way better than it had any fucking right to be. It was a lot like Howard Shore's, but it had its own, it's totally its own thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was very on point. I think it captured the vibe of the scene, like, every single time. The wedding scene, the music they had playing during that wedding, it felt humble, like the village they're in.
Yeah.
But also kind of fit like that Lord of the Rings feeling you'd expect.
Yeah, it was still very fantasy.
Agreed. Yeah. And it was so good. We have a short list, just kind of a long list, actually, of people that worked on the music. I'm going to take like a few here. We'll go back and forth. Tobias.
Round Robin.
Yeah, Round Robin. Tobias Bublot, Adam Langston, Jacob Shelby,
Kevin Webster, Rob Westwood, Peter Bateman,
Arhan Kiel, Toby and Cody McClure, and Martin Westlake.
Yeah, all those folks did that shit for free.
Yeah, and no profit. None of these people in any of these movies got a profit from anything.
No.
Also, Arhan, if I said your name wrong, if it's Arjan, I'm sorry.
Sorry, yeah, we're not really sure about that one. But, we love you, though. You did a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, it was everything was great.
You did a great job. Art direction, also great. Costume, amazing for such a budget.
Yeah, honestly fantastic.
Yeah.
It was all very believable, too. Mm-hmm. Like,
the opening excerpt was actually from an interview, Kate Madison, the director, saying how they would swap things around and stuff like that, mm-hmm. just to make everything new again and usable for a new scene, you know?
Yeah, reusing their props and things just to, like, fit each different aesthetic. Very smart. I'm sure that saved them a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Recycling, being resourceful, good things.
Yep.
The costumes were really well done. Some of the orc makeup was a little rough.
And some of it was questionable.
I only say that because I've watched so much of the sci-fi show
Face Off. Bro, yeah. I was literally like, yeah, I was like, we should got some Face Off contestants to do this shit. Yep.
But yeah, no, they did a really good job making everything look like lived in and worn.
They totally did.
Yeah, another thing really cool about this movie were the languages that they used. They had a really good use of both Sindarin and Adunaic, which was super cool because I don't know that I've ever actually heard anyone speak Adunaic before.
No, I think I heard it once like on YouTube like years and years ago, but I do not remember what it sounded like. And yeah, two people that worked on those languages were Roman Rausch and Anushka Moreno. Nerd royalty, those people. Awesome. Way to go. Some of the use of Adunaic was a little bit like stilted, but you know, it's fucking and it's a made up ass language.
It's true. Know? And it's a fan film.
So like you don't have, and that's another thing. If they would have had $1 billion to hire a linguist to mm-hmm. teach them how to perfectly speak Adunaic, it would have been
just different story.
Yeah, but they did this
all on their own.
Can we talk about their acting?
Yeah, let's talk about the acting.
Honestly, on par with some of the performances in Peter Jackson's
trilogy. I'd have to agree.
And I think this the actors at work, the production company that did this, I think is basically just that, a group of actors that do their own productions for things. I'm pretty sure that's their mm-hmm. their shtick. And you can tell the passion for the whole process that these people have. And yeah, most of them are better than, for sure, Steven Seagal. They put way more effort in.
Oh, for sure.
Passing the litmus test.
They stand up for their stunts.
And even better than looking at you, Orlando Bloom. I know I cast shade on him all the time, but, you know, these actors really, really go hard, you guys.
I feel almost bad saying this because I genuinely liked everyone else. I was a little iffy on Eridor, Arathorn's father.
Yeah. Arathorn's father.
The one who got killed by the cave troll.
Right, right.
And yeah, even though I didn't love the Elgarain and Dearborn love story, those actors, they did really well. Especially, it's mm-hmm. not easy to direct and act.
Like, no.
That's so.
And Kate did a really good job.
Yeah, props to her.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I kind of forgot about Arathorn's dad.
Yeah, he's a little forgettable,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of the point I'm going for, yeah.
Yeah. Something also that's remarkable about this movie, the fight scenes, right?
Yeah, the action mm-hmm. in the fight scenes are way better than we expected. The choreography is really epic, and with the help of some great editing and some cool cinematography, everything just really comes together.
Yeah, makes it just epic as shit. Like, yeah. Fun fact for, well, does anybody have anything else to, before I close with our fun fact, anybody else have anything? I think we pretty much covered Born of Hope.
I'd like to say, at least in relation to the fight scenes, they were of larger scale than I was expecting to.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Absolutely. They had a hell of a cast for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just like even some of the kills or things, like in the beginning when he's out on his like journey and he sneaks up on those orcs and they're just like, oh, yeah. That was, yeah, I really liked all of that stuff. I don't know why he was out there. I don't think they really explained that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Maybe that was just to get the montage of going from place to place.
Yeah. And I think that was all with Arathorn, right? You're talking about?
Yeah, Arathorn, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Arathorn is great, just to go back to the acting. Mm-hmm. I meant to say that, especially that the leads in this movie are go really hard.
Yeah, the fellow who did Arathorn, he really sold it.
Really sold it, yeah. Great guy. I hope all these actors got work because of this movie. They did such a fucking good job. I hope they got work.
I think maybe the one person I felt questionable in the beginning was Elgarain's dad.
Oh, Deerhael or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't really know how I felt about him in the beginning. I think it was iffy, but he grew on me.
He grew on me. And when he said that shit, when he was like, if you fail the Dunedain, you have to answer to your people or whatever. But if you fail her, you have to answer to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just a really cool, like, you know, I never had a dad to look out for me. So it warmed my heart that a dad would care about their child.
I like how he said it, though, too. He's like, basically, there's no way around this. I have no choice but but for this. So
I love when he's like, is that a yes? And the mom just smiles at him.
Yeah.
That's as close as you're gonna get.
Yeah. It's a cute movie, you guys. It's a cute little love story.
It's sentimental.
Yeah, watch it action. With your significant other. It's a good date movie. But I think that's all we pretty much got for our discussion on Born of Hope. We have a fun fact here. There's actually a sizable chunk of people who are PJ Trilogy haters online, mostly on Reddit, that say that Born of Hope is actually a better Tolkien adaptation than the Peter Jackson trilogies.
Oh, no shit.
Yes, and filmmaker Kate Madison was actually asked about this in an interview in 2010. And here's the thing, guys. Controversial statement. I don't know if this wants to be a KOT statement, if you guys agree with me on this or not. But honestly, as a Dunedain head, these folks really did the Dunedain shit right.
Oh, yes.
And the thing that the PJ adaptation is weakest on, and I've said it years and year, for years now on this podcast, is what? The treatment of the Dunedain lore, right? Yeah. And yeah, there's Born of Hope doing it right for $30,000. And then you got Peter Jackson for millions of dollars just totally shitting on it.
Mm-hmm. So, honestly, yeah, we get a lot of elf stuff in the trilogy.
But no Dunedain.
But like, freaking how important is Aragorn to the story?
It's so
King Elisar, hello?
Return of the King is the title of the third book.
Yeah, how, all right.
You're mad with me now.
I'm now mad, yes.
You understand the plight of the Dunedain head now.
Yeah,
no.
I feel like I've put on my Dunedain head.
Thank you. I knew you'd join eventually.
I think what would be fun is just add this and then the hunt for Gollum and then watch the trilogy.
Oh, hell yeah.
Even Horn of Gondor, like they all make like a really nice backstory to some of the other things.
They all set up the universe really well, yeah.
All right, and now we have an excerpt from an interview with Kate Madison. It came from a website, jiddy.com, I think, right?
Yeah.
Jiddy.
Which turns out is the website of a local place like Leicestershire, which is in Britain, I think. So it's like a local town website that got to interview Kate, which is pretty fucking cool.
That is, in my opinion. Yeah, that's really cool. All right, question by Danny and Joel, the answer. Ready, go.
Your film has been described as better than the Peter Jackson epics, which is a great reflection of your work. How does this make you feel?
Obviously, it's extremely flattering to get good feedback. Though I don't think Born of Hope is or ever could be better than Peter Jackson's trilogy, I know that Tolkien fans have been very supportive and have loved the simplicity of our story, and that we stuck extremely true to Tolkien's timeline of events. Some people were disappointed in Peter Jackson when he changed parts of the story or left bits out, but you have to do this when making a film. It's a very different medium and way of storytelling to a book. I think in the end, we were lucky that Tolkien wrote so little of our story, making it easier to stay true to that small amount. Again, it is amazing the kind of response we've had, and I certainly hope that it means that people will want to see future films we make. It also hopefully proves to people trying to make their first films that you don't need a huge budget and lots of fancy equipment to make a good film.
True.
It's totally true. Yeah. And is Born of Hope better than Peter Jackson's trilogy in any aspects? That's up to you, my friends. So check it out on YouTube. Watch the film, and then go on Discord and join our Discord server. Go to the episode chat and post about your opinions of these films, because we want to hear it. And maybe we'll, because they're free to stream, maybe we can like stream them on Discord for everybody. That'd be fun to do.
Oh, have a streaming party. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah, really, that'd be fun to do like leading up to this, or after this episode comes out.
Fan Film Fridays.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fan films. I know that we are speaking of fan films. Should we move on to the next?
Let's do it.
Fan film.
Yes, Born of Hope. I think we covered it. I loved it. Check it out, everybody. Born of Hope.
Loved it. Just fantastic.
Fantastic film. Loved it. Best film.
Not another like it.
Not another like it. Ever before made here today. Yeah, Hunt for Gollum. Let's get into it, guys.
Hunt for Gollum. Okay, so this was the second of our three fan films. So this one was about 39 minutes long, and its budget was less than $5,000. And this came out in the UK in 2009. So this is another one from a while back.
Same year, actually, as Born Hope.
Yep, same year as Born Hope.
Same year. Something in the air that year, 2009. That was when we graduated high school.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, actually.
Wow. We were just hitting the world, you guys. Wow.
Back when we had Obama.
Which is funny. We actually directed a film in 2009. And it was a lot worse than these films. Yeah.
I remember that.
I'm sure you had less people in a smaller budget.
Yeah, it was a $300 budget, I think.
If that.
Well, The Hunt for Gollum was written and directed by Chris Bouchard.
I think it's Bouchard. Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. Hopefully, you know, you're cool with this. Any additional writing help we got from Sabina Sitar, Julianne Honey Manal, and Stuart Price.
Yeah, nerd royalty, those guys. This one had a tiny, tiny budget of $5,000, which we said. It saved a ton of money, actually, by crowdsourcing the visual effects, which is an interesting idea.
Yeah, it was an interesting idea. And I think that was one of the things that kind of showed throughout this.
Definitely. Yes.
The very blatant inconsistency with the special effects stands out a little bit.
There's a reason.
But it is a very creative way to get around the budgeting problem.
Right.
There's a reason you don't see Gollum very often.
Yeah, we talk about it a little bit later in the but yeah, there's a reason why Gollum is shot around, right? Yeah, this film, it premiered at the Sci-Fi London Film Festival on May 3rd, 2009. Yeah, 2009, and was streamed for free on the internet the very same day. And as of today, it has 13 million views on YouTube.
Another very popular fan film.
Yeah, way to go, guys. Let's give a brief synopsis. Joe, you want to give us a brief synopsis?
Yeah, so this one, Gandalf gives Aragorn the task of finding and capturing Gollum before the enemy can get information from him about the One Ring. Aragorn must travel through the wilds of Middle-earth to do a task that only he can accomplish. Hunt for Gollum.
Heck yeah.
The hunt for Gollum.
I did appreciate how Gandalf was kind of like, you're the only guy that can track this bastard down.
You're the only man for the job.
He kind of said, if you can't do it, no one can.
Yeah, they recycled that Galadriel line that she uses with Frodo. Mm-hmm. But this time it was Gandalf to Aragorn.
Yeah. So initial response is, Joel, what do you think?
So initial response, this one was probably my least favorite of the three. And it's not because it was bad by any means. So I feel kind of bad saying it was like my least favorite.
Right.
But of the three fan films, I think this one also went the hardest on the Peter Jackson movie aesthetic. Like, it had a very, very Howard Shore-esque score, and it also had some very loving recreations of Peter Jackson's versions of places, like the Prancing Pony, that I thought were great. And the pacing of this one was also pretty good as well. I like that.
Yeah, well-paced, like the Peter Jackson trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Peter Jackson gets enough credit for his pacing, Joel. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes, that's exactly what I was getting at.
Trev, what do you think?
So, like Joel, this was my least favorite. This one definitely feels more like a, I'm going to say in quotes, fan film than the other two. Born of Hope and The Horn of Gondor just kind of, like, they feel like they're a step above this one. But there's an orc battle scene that is pretty cool, but it felt kind of cheesy. But it was entertaining nonetheless. And to me, I don't think the cast really fit the vibe of the characters. Yeah, that's just kind of how I feel.
I think fair criticisms, I guess, yeah. Joe, how do you feel?
Yeah, I had some story qualms, and I have some. There's some things I wish they'd did a little bit differently, which I'll talk about later. I loved the orc fight scene around 24 minutes in. It's literally just Aragorn kicking
in
a
the
whole
woods.
Group of like orcs' asses. Yeah, like a baker's dozen. That alone, I thought, was totally worth watching. And I thought this was the most epic feeling out of the three, I guess.
Okay. I'd probably agree with that, yeah.
We did see a Nazgul in this one.
Yeah. That's right, see a Nazgul in this one.
That is true.
So, yeah, the epicness felt.
Yeah.
It was there. It was epic.
My initial reaction, this one is a lot of fun. Probably more so than Born of Hope. It is, it's pretty fucking violent and gory, which is nice. More so than Born of Hope as well. And yeah, I appreciate that. This is overall a very fun, I think I watched this three times, you know, it was fun.
This was legitimately a fun one, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into discussion. Main criticism right off the bat. Let's just do that. Definitely the CGI, I would say.
Definitely the CGI. For me, the one of the things that stood out the most was immediately one of the early on CG shots is the imitation shot of the ring like tumbling down a rock in the caves. It literally looks like something from a PS3 video game.
Yeah, very much did. But with a budget like this, like, I wouldn't expect much more.
Yeah, I mean, it is also from 2009, and with that budget, it is kind of to be expected, but that just stood out to me.
I forgot, y'all, that 2009 was a long-ass time ago.
It was a while back.
Yeah.
That was about the PS3 time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We're getting old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was really good for its time.
Maybe it was amazing.
Yeah, maybe we're being dumb.
Yeah, I had some of the story qualms I had. With, like, Gollum, I actually kind of was digging when we saw him from a distance or just saw his hands. Like, there's a scene where he steals a fish and then you see him on the roof from a distance eating it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish the whole movie was just Aragorn fighting orcs and Gollum stealing babies and fish from houses.
That would be pretty sick, yeah.
And then they could just end it when Aragorn captures Gollum. But, like, halfway through the movie, they put Gollum in a sack. Mm-hmm. And I get why they put Gollum in a sack.
I get it. Oh, because I get it so hard.
It saves time and money, and I totally get it. But I just thought it lost some of its momentum when Aragorn starts just walking around, toting Gollum over his shoulder in a sack like Santa, and talking to him.
Yeah, I thought that was super weird. Like, that's got to be so tiring carrying this creature.
It is a funny workaround. Yeah.
But I thought I liked the guy who did Aragorn. It was, I think someone said it's almost like a knockoff, like a Wish version of Aragorn, which is kind of true.
Yeah.
But I thought he did his best with it. Not as good as like Arathorn from Born of Hope, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really cool to see the Prancing Pony again. I would love mm-hmm. to, you know, that was pretty fucking cool. I like that. This one, we did the really went hard on the PJ aesthetic.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely, especially the prancing pony scene. That mm-hmm. that really stood out to me. It really felt like the scene from the Fellowship of the Ring.
Sure did.
I feel like they definitely captured the style.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
of it, like the lighting and everything, the color. Oh, yeah.
I feel like Aragorn's sitting in the same booth.
Yep.
Smoking same pipe.
Wait, what's the barkeep's name?
Barlam and Butterbur.
He wasn't in it, was he?
No, they didn't have a Butterbur.
I never even thought of that. Why wasn't Butterbur?
Missed opportunity.
Missed, yeah. Major points off for not having... Thanks for bringing that up, Joe. Major points off for not having Barlam and Butterbur.
Some dude with big old mutton chops comes walking in.
Yeah.
I mean, but hey, guys, they really did their best to make this as sweeping and epic as they could.
They sure did.
With the CGI, some drone footage. We even got natural landscapes.
Yeah, some pretty beautiful natural places in Britain where they shot this, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like this one did the best job at making it feel like you were in Middle Earth.
Agreed.
Maybe, I just wish Horn of Gondor, we'll get to it, but maybe if it was longer, but...
Mm-hmm.
All three of the movies do like the epic landscape voiceover map montage. I think Hunt for Gollum was my favorite. I don't know what were your guys' favorites. They were all good, I think
they all did it well,
like in terms of the landscapes and this getting the settings down. I think I'd agree with you. I think this one definitely felt the most. It took me to Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At least it definitely took you to the forests and a little bit of the caves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really, I think I preferred Born of Hope's, or no, not Born of Hope, the Horn of Gondor's, just because of how vertical they end up going with it. And wherever they chose to shoot it was just freaking gorgeous.
Yeah. Another thing about this is a Minnesotan, I got to point out, I swear the fucking Dúnedain use a loon call.
So I rewatched this.
At the same time.
I had to rewind this, and I even rewatched it in my spare time and rewound it. Yes, there are loon calls in this movie. I don't know if it's the Dúnedain doing them, but he's just like walking out in the woods and there's like loons around.
Are there loons in Britain? British fans, please let us know. Are there loons over there? Because we got a shitload of them here. Well, they make crazy noises early in the morning.
Yeah, and late at night.
And late at night, yes. They're such a great state bird.
It was just a very specific, I don't know.
Yeah.
It seemed oddly placed.
Joel, can you do your best loon call impression?
No.
Should I try it? Ruru will love it.
What?
I just remember it's the sound that the state lottery commercial makes.
I don't know how accurate that is.
I don't know. It's a lunar
call. So it's got two stereotypical calls, and I am going to I have a trouble imitating either of them.
No, it's a weird sound.
It's a unique bird. Unique fowl.
Yes.
Moving past the bird.
Moving past the loon.
Past
which is
the bird.
Which is, just so you know, in your trivia contest, the state bird from Minnesota, the loon.
And we are proud of it.
And we are proud of it. It dives underwater like a submarine.
It does. It's got red eyes.
It's got red eyes. That's pretty fucking cool.
It pierces other birds and fish with its sharp beak.
Yeah.
It's metal.
It shoots lasers.
Shoots lasers out of its eyeballs.
Eyes.
One of those things is not real. You got to figure out which one it is.
Yeah. Got to come to Minnesota to figure out. Nerd nuggets. Let's talk about nerd nuggets. There's one of my favorite ranger nerd nuggets.
Why does that sound like Rangers? Like, I think of Ranger poop.
Ranger
what?
Like Ranger.
A
like
Ranger a nugget?
Yeah.
A Ranger nugget. I found a Ranger nugget. Oh, God.
Sorry. Go on.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So there's another Ranger that we run into, and Aragorn and him start talking about hobbits. And there's when Aragorn mentions hobbits, there's no the stereotypical response like there usually is in Tolkien work. What's a hobbit? Never heard of it, right? He's just, yeah, of course, I know what hobbits are. Yeah, they live in the Old North Kingdom where we're from, asshole. Yeah, I know what hobbits are.
Dunedain.
Yeah, I know what they are. Yeah, so I thought that was a really cool nerd nugget. Like Joe mentioned earlier, yeah, Adrian Webster is Aragorn. Really, really good. He passes the Steven Seagal effort litmus test. He performed his stunt standing up. And yeah, he was standing the whole time. And yeah. We didn't have to ADR any of his dialogue because he refused to say it, you know? But yeah, he has the presence to actually carry a film that has a very small cast, which Steven Seagal does not. So,
see, despite these prizes you give for him, I mean, I think he did a fine job, but he just didn't give me Aragorn vibes.
You're a hater. I get it, though.
Not a hater. Just like, he kind of felt like he could have been Aragorn's cousin.
Okay.
Knockoff, sure. Aragorn, discount Eric, whatever you want. Like,
so a Dunedain, not the Dunedain.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, got it.
Well, I don't know. I kind of thought both their Aragorn and Gandalf actors do very loving imitations of the Peter Jackson characters. They're both pretty good, especially Aragorn. Their Aragorn guy really got down like the Viggo whisper talk, you know, like Aragorn does.
Part of the problem with this one is that it's so hard to not compare these actors to the Peter Jackson film actors,
right?
Just because, I mean, Ian McKellen, Andy Serkis, Viggo Mortensen are so good. So it's, I think they all do a like decent job, but it's just, mm-hmm. It's so hard when
you're up against
trying
that.
To,
yeah.
I hate to do this, but I think the Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, Gollum. I liked that Gandalf better than the one.
Oh, really? In the Gollum
Trevor?
Game?
In the Gollum game, yeah.
Trevor, I want you to go wait in the truck. Okay? Oh, my God. All right. I hope these people hear this episode and they come for you, Trevor. I hope these British nerds that made this movie, they come for you. So there's a part of this movie where Gollum is in a burlap sack for like a prolonged period of time. I thought this was a clever idea of having, you know, Gollum in the story, but not having to show Gollum.
It is a clever workaround for the budget. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't have to show him, but he's still there, right?
Frodo got to use the magic rope. Aragorn just puts him in a sack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totes him around.
Yeah.
They should have just, Aragorn should have just had like a little Joey pouch. And
yeah, what do they call those? A Bjorn?
Like, yeah, like a baby Bjorn, yeah.
Baby Bjorn. That'd be pretty funny. Just a pissed off Gollum just...
waving his
just
arms
slapping him in the face and shit. Yeah, just, yeah, it'd be so funny.
No, that's why you flip him around and have him facing forward, right?
Yeah. So he can only flail forward. Yeah. Speaking of the Gollum voice, dude, the Gollum voice dude's a little bit extra.
I did notice that. The voice of Gollum was a little extra.
A little extra, but I mean, let's be honest, Andy Serkis is kind of extra too, so like that checks out.
It's fair.
You know?
I think it was a good voice until it got to the like lower, softer voices that they were doing. Because it definitely sounded like Gollum when he was doing like
the screaming
and talking back and forth. But as soon as he got super low, it lost that like, I don't know, that sort of like higher pitch that got
the Gollum tone.
The Gollum tone, sure, mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it was okay.
There is a fight scene about 23 minutes into this movie. This is, 40 minutes long or so?
Ooh, hold on. Before we talk about this fight scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Earlier before this fight scene, when Aragorn is out in the woods tracking down Gollum, there's like a couple of orcs arguing back and forth how hungry they are. And they do one of those like, oh, did you hear something? And then they zoom in on one of the orcs. And when they zoom back out, one of them's missing. And then
like a horror film.
Like a horror film. Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a big, wide open space. Like, how do you not see your friend just disappear? But then they do the whole, like, he sneaks up on that last one and gets him, too. And it's just like, I thought that was fun.
It's fun. And that's, like, why I think it nailed the PJ playfulness better than the other two. I don't think they were necessarily trying to imitate those, the other two, but this one had it more.
Yeah, this one was clearly trying to be.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to say this one is, I don't think campy is the right word, but it kind of feels like it's getting some of that.
I think that's why I kind of dug this one is because Peter Jackson's films are very, they have a lot of funny moments and campy moments too. And I feel like Born of Hope and Horn of Gondor were like very serious, which is fine, but I did kind of enjoy that this one, it was very fun. It was just a fun movie.
Agreed. Yeah, I would totally agree with you on that.
It did
that.
Even have one moment of like some minor comedic relief where he like sits down for the evening at a fire and he like looks over his shoulder at Gollum struggling to get out of the sack. And there's even like some lighthearted music for a second as he smirks. And there's some fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It starts off pretty dark, though.
Yeah, it does start off kind of somber.
Especially when he meets up with that ranger and it's like being told about the ghost in the night, you know, stealing the babies and stuff, like Joel just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's straight out of the books.
Yeah, it is straight out of the books. The blood-drenched ghost eating babies.
Honestly, stealing babies out of the crib, yeah.
I agree with you, Joe. It should have been, here's Gollum's story, here's Aragorn's story, and the end is when they meet. And he captures. I agree. I think that would have been
cool.
It would have been awesome to see Gollum just sneaking in people's houses and doing stuff.
Eating babies.
If I made this, he'd be eating a baby.
Oh yeah, totally.
Raw and wiggling.
We'd be not on YouTube.
Yeah. We would not be on YouTube.
There is a super epic 23 minutes into this movie. Super epic fight scene. It's violent and gory. Which is really cool. More PJ.
It wasn't any red blood though, right?
No, it was black.
It was all orc blood. Yeah, yeah. This is the one in the woods, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I love that they embrace the violence more so. It was just so much. It's literally just Aragorn, and he fights off a whole squad of orcs. Yeah, I could literally. I wish they had more scenes of that. And the kills are all really inventive and fun. There's this part where Aragorn stabs two orcs at once.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
There's another part where he like dodges as these two orcs with spears charge at him, and they end up like stabbing each other in the neck.
Pretty funny.
They also do that kind of stuff though, where like. He held his sword up and spun it around and blocked a bunch of them in a row. Like that's what cool. I mean by it's kind of corny. Like it does that kind of stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
And then props to all of these. I could tell like none of them were too quickly edited. None of them were too shaky. Like you can always tell the
clear action.
Yeah, clear action, which was really nice. Mm-hmm.
I even ended up rewatching this one at like 1.25, 1.5 speed on YouTube just to refresh, it even held up in a quicker speed.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, because the editing's so good. Yeah. Yeah, it's more Guillermo del Toro and less Tony Scott, right?
Yeah, nice.
I love Tony Scott.
Oh, we know.
Top Gun,
fantastic piece of war propaganda. You're right.
Volleyball scene is the best one.
It's All Quiet on the Western Front and Top Gun. Those are my favorite war films. The editing and cinematography did a lot of heavy lifting to make that fight scene really, really cool.
And then we also have to talk about Goiter Orc.
Talk about Goiter Orc.
And Goiter Orc is just, he's just like a slightly bigger orc. Mm-hmm. He's clearly the leader of the orcs.
A captain of orcs.
And he's got some kind of large growth on his neck. Yeah, I don't know if it's like
it's more like what neck? It's gone. Just goes like head, tumor, shoulder.
Yeah,
like
big old fleshy thing.
It looks like he's one of those bodybuilders that's been lifting, but just real hard on that side of his neck. You know what I mean? Instead
or a chronic masturbator.
Or yeah, he's chronically cranking it out. So
with that one arm.
There you go.
But I love that they made a gross looking orc. It just gives the orc personality. It reminded me a little bit of Gothmog from Return of the King.
The tumorous orc. Yeah.
And the goiter orc has this awesome death scene where Aragorn is on the ground and like sticks his sword into the growth on his neck. And then he uses his foot to like push on the hilt of the sword to drive it further up into him. And it's just a lot of fun.
Looks like something on a Dr. Pimple Popper or something. It's fucking disgusting. Yeah.
In addition to goiter orc, I feel like the other orcs also kind of looked a bit, I don't know, mutated or just kind of off or goofy. Like, I feel like that the big neck growth was not specifically unique to that guy, just he had the biggest one.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he was the leader. He had the biggest goiter.
I feel there was also, I think it was in this one, I can't remember. Yes, it was definitely Hunt for Gollum. There's an orc in here that looks a lot like a clown, I remember.
Paint going on.
Yeah.
The orcs in this one were a little bit shaky. But the shakiest of them was probably goiter orc. I think the mask didn't look like it was even properly adhesed to his face, because like the mouth didn't quite move when the orc was yelling and moving things, and like the eye sockets weren't like connected to the eyes. That one was just a little bit shaky. The rest of them were all right.
They might have bit off a little bit more than they could chew on that one.
Even the masks, like when they came down to the shoulder, kind of looked like they weren't trying to hide the fact that it's a prosthetic some spots. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think if I had to say by far the lamest thing about this one, though, is one of the lamest things about the Peter Jackson trilogy, and it's something that is taken directly from that should have been fucking left there, and that is the Arwen dream sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Totally lame.
I didn't like that at all.
It
wasn't necessary, really.
It wasn't necessary in the Peter Jackson one either. We could have done without it in all versions.
I don't like how it just starts off with her just like in a black cloak, so like you don't know if it's an okay thing that's happening, and then bam, takes it off, and now she's white and she's talking to you, but like in your mind, none of their lips are moving. they're not having a conversation.
Telepathic dream conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's an elf.
He is passed out, to be fair. He was like hit with a poison nail or something.
Yeah, I think Hunt for Gollum definitely is kind of the most fan-servy one of the three. Like, it definitely really leaned into the Peter Jackson trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Very hard.
Even the Gollum looks very similar to the CG they did for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the characters and places were all more or less imitations of the way that they were presented in the Peter Jackson stuff. But they didn't do too bad. Like, I do got to give them credit. Like I said, it was my least favorite of them, but it was not bad for what it was.
No, totally. Very solid. Very, very solid. I think that's pretty much all we have for the Hunt for Gollum, though. Anybody else have any conclusionary thoughts? No?
I think despite the fact that it sounds like I've only shit on it for the most part, guys, it is good. Do check it out.
Like you're shitting on it, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, it was my least favorite for a reason.
It kind of sounds like you think you could have done better.
Yeah, why don't you direct?
Yeah, why don't you direct a 2000?
Hold on, you can be a critic and not the artist.
Yes.
Everyone's a critic.
Yes, you can.
If anyone wants to give me like $12,000 to make my baby-eating golem origin story,
that'd be sick.
Please let me know.
If any really rich, really sick in the head people are out there that want to give Joe money to do that, please do.
Come up with like a side story where there was like an algae bloom in all the water, so he couldn't eat fish, so he started eating babies or something like that.
Oh my god, he turned to the only other thing he could.
To the only other little raw wiggling things he could find.
A sweeter meat.
Crying in the night.
Okay. Well, enough baby cannibalism jokes. Let's get into Horn of Gondor. Horn of Gondor, we found this one while we were watching the other two.
Yeah, this was the surprise bonus.
Surprise.
One.
Yeah,
it was in the suggestions. Thanks, YouTube, for doing something.
Yeah, way to go, algorithm.
Yeah, originally we were just going to do those two, and then we found this one. And this was honestly a very pleasant surprise, I think, totally. For all of us.
Totally,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was largely sold on the fact that it was so short. It was
it's 20 minutes, guys. Let's just add it
to
this.
Yeah, we'll just knock it out real quick. Yeah.
Our curiosity was not sated by the first two.
No. There's not a whole lot of information on this one, honestly, but let's get into the information. What do we know about it?
Yeah, it's 19 minutes 24 on the video length, but actually it's like 15 minutes for the actual flick.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a budget of $12,000,
which is a decent budget. The last Hunt for Gollum, wasn't that like five?
It was less than five.
Yeah.
And then
so
it was like,
this is a sizable budget.
About 30K for the Born of Hope.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So pretty good. We had a pretty good gambit. It ran the gambit of
this is right in between the other two. It got a good spread.
Also a lot newer, however. This one...
However, it is easier to make a movie cheaper now.
Yeah, this one came out in 2020, so this one is significantly newer than the other than the other two.
Yeah, another thing that's unique about this one compared to the other two is it's based on the unfinished tales, specifically the story Kirin and Errol and the friendship of Gondor and Rohan, which is a fantastic chapter you should check out.
It's a nice deep cut.
It is a fucking deep cut. And I love that somebody would make a movie about that deep cut. It's so cool.
I really like that we got something that is more distant away from the Peter Jackson trilogy in terms of the timeline and characters. Like there's no crossover. There's no like Line of Kings, like as much as we all love the Dunedain. It's nice to have something completely different and still be this good.
Yes, exactly. Crazily enough, this was produced in the Czech Republic. Strange place.
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Horrible place.
I've never been there. No, I'm sure it's beautiful. Prague is there, right? Yeah, I heard Prague is great.
There's a YouTuber I watch quite often.
From the Czech?
In the Czech Republic.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I would never shit on Czech Republic. My sister went there in like 2007, I think. She said it was great. Oh. This also premiered free online on September 18th. 2020, at the height of the goddamn lockdown in America.
Yeah, that was probably a good time to pick up some views while everyone was fucking sitting at home.
Yeah, dude.
The timing of that release just right.
Yes, yes.
Speaking of views, they had 2.7 million last time we checked on YouTube for this one, which
is good for it being so recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially compared to the other two.
The other two have had 20 years, no, not 20 years, like 15 years or so to acquire this.
Yeah.
And this is the past, what, four?
4 years, yeah.
So that's a good gain.
Yeah, and this one was triple threat guy here, written, directed, and fucking edited. I respect people who edit their own stuff so fucking much. I really respect people that edit their own stuff. This dude is named Simon Pesta, or Simon Pesta, depending on how you pronounce it in Czech. and this movie was also starring this guy, fucking Czech Charles Bronson, Borek Belfin.
Oh,
this
guy nailed it, man. He really fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
He fit the character about as good as Arathorn fit his character. Like they fit right in, perfect puzzle piece.
Very good casting.
Yeah.
Is Czech Charles Bronson a compliment?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yes. Charlie Bronson.
Just to clarify.
We should make a Czech version of Death Wish. That'd be really funny. But yeah, you can find a full list of full credits on IMDb for this one. But other than that, there's not a whole hell of a lot of information on this film. So we're just going to get right into the...
kind of surprising, considering how recent.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, let's plot synopsis. Let's do it.
So the Horn of Gondor tells the tale of Borondir, who is a real character, and his very real journey to meet Eorl the Young in the Vale of the Anduin. And he's one of several knights that starts out on a journey. He's tasked, but Borondir is the only one who survives. And he has to fight his way through enemy territory to seek help for Gondor from their ancient friends up north.
Bum, bum, bum.
So some of our initial responses with this one. So for me, like I said, this one was our surprise one, and it was a very pleasant surprise. And honestly, this one might be my favorite of the three. Just because of its simplicity. And I just really like that it's about this one guy and his journey. So there's very little dialogue because it doesn't really need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that allows them to lend more attention to the acting and like the fight choreography. And I also really love this story. I love how historically accurate it is. It's great. I really like this one. Like I said, I think it's my favorite of the three.
Hell yeah.
I also really like this one. It was short, to the point. It kind of feels like the prologue to like a bigger more epic movie. And you basically just get enough information to set things up and it gets right into the journey.
It sure does.
I think for me, this one is probably tied with Born of Hope. If this one got more budget and was longer, I think it could easily soar above Born of Hope for me.
Totally agree with that sentiment.
And the fights in this one, since it's not very long, you kind of get like one big fight, but it's very well choreographed. There's some really sweet moments. They do a large variety of different moves throughout the fight, which made it very interesting to watch.
What about you, Joe?
Yeah, I liked this one too. My only complaint with this, and it's sort of a good complaint, is I just wish that we had been able to get more of Borondir's journey.
Totally.
I know it's
More in the text.
Yeah, and that's what I was reading about it, and it was like he went without food for 15 days.
Yeah,
and
there's super specific details to this.
Yeah,
guy's
all
journey,
this. Yeah, and I think that because there's a moment where he blows the horn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's like really awesome, but it just would have been even more awesome if we had seen, you know, got to see like all of his trials and tribulations. But
gotcha. Yeah, like, honestly, what led up to that? Yeah,
this is honestly a 2.5 hour movie there if you want it, ending with an epic battle of the Field of the Calibrand if you want it.
I could see it.
Totally could see it. But yeah, my initial reaction, I fucking love this one, you guys. I think it was really, really good. Borondir is he's a favorite unsung hero of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a really, really good job telling his brief but badass tale. So let's get into some discussion. Let's talk about the lore.
So we really dig that they used a lesser-known story for this film. As we said, we're happy, or at least I said I'm happy it's outside of like the main trilogy, you know, diving into the unfinished tales.
Yeah, I really liked that about Born of Hope and this one. They both told like really interesting stories that I wasn't super familiar with. Not that Hunt of Gollum wasn't interesting, but we're already so familiar with those characters, so it was cool to see characters that we didn't, you know, get in the Peter Jackson trilogy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some new meat.
I really dug the opening with the Gondorian historian telling us the story of the Balakoth War. That was pretty fucking sick. It was a good way to do that narration in the beginning.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it does a great job to set the historical and geographical context for the rest of the film.
I also think it's really great. You can tell when it's being told from because he says King Elisar, so you know it's got to be end of Third Age, early Fourth Age.
Right. It said 500 years before the birth of, or the coronation of King Elisar. Yeah.
So they set out the timeline very well, which I think helps to paint a better picture of, like, overall what is happening in Middle-earth.
Yeah. What state are we in right now?
Yeah. There's some real nerd nuggets in here, too. I love the reference to Sulimo, one of the lesser-known names of Manwë, the Valar, right?
Oh, very nice. I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah. He mentions Sulimo. I think he says the breath of Sulimo or something. Like
oh,
that.
Is that before he blows? He's like, voice or the horn strength or carry my voice.
Oh, yeah. He's like, basically, if my allies are still out there, let them hear.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he calls upon Sulimo or Manwë, Lord of the Winds, right? To do that. It was also really, really cool to see the Balakoth War because we get to see these like wars with orcs and shit all the time. It was nice to see some man versus man action, I guess.
Yeah,
as it were.
That was one of the things I really appreciated about this movie is that they were able to have the enemy be Balakoth, not orcs. They didn't have to worry about all the prosthetics and the budget towards makeup for the orcs. They just had to make these guys look like some warring men.
Mm-hmm. They definitely kind of just looked like, I don't know, kind of tribal, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're Easterling tribes. They use the word tribes, you know. So the Balakoth are never, like, as far as I'm aware, like, super described. It does mention that they're somewhat primitive and their weapons are not up to snuff with the Gondorians, but there's a lot of them. That's what I remember their description being.
The Balakoth are related to the Wainriders, right?
Right. They're, in some way. They're said to be descendants of the Wainriders, yes.
Okay.
Because the Wainriders' attacks, they were kicked out at the Battle of Camp, which Arinur did, and he ended up being the last king of Gondor, remember? And then this is during Kirion and Ael, so he was steward, so that's during the Age of the Steward. So there's a few centuries, I think, between the two.
Okay.
Another thing I thought that I just want to bring up with them in particular is we get to see like maybe four or five dudes.
Mm-hmm.
That are from, oh my god, we're literally talking about
Rohan?
No.
Balakoth?
The Balakoth?
The Balakoth.
Easterlings,
just
yeah.
Said it. Mm-hmm. We get to see a few of them, and they don't, like, a couple of them kind of look off human. you know? Like, yeah, they've been changed in some way.
Well, they could even be half-orcs. That's another thing that stands up to lore. They could be half-orcs.
Honestly, I would believe that. One of them definitely looks
pretty orcish to me.
Looked pretty orcish. Yes. Yeah. Not just like skin color, like the actual facial features. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and like there was almost, other than, you know, like aesthetic liberties that they took, there was almost no material taken from anywhere that wasn't just straight up in the text, which I appreciated about this one.
Very, very faithful.
One of the things I wish they would have kind of added, this would have been a super, super nerdy nugget, but this is just because I'm me. I really wish that they would have mentioned that Borondir was actually a kinsman of the Aotheid. Because if you remember back in those days, after the Kinstrife, a lot of Northmen moved down to Gondor, and they mingled with the Gondorian blood, and there were houses that were houses of Northmen living in Gondor, right? Borondir was a descendant of one of these, so he's actually akin to the people he's going to see who are also descendants of the Northmen.
Oh, and he does say that when he's talking to the guys at the end, like, we are kin, or something along those lines.
Does he say that?
I'm pretty sure he does.
Oh, shit, I might have missed that. That's crazy.
Like, he was looking for his kin in the north or something.
Okay, yeah. I wish, like I said, this is a two-hour movie waiting to happen, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Condensed into 15 minutes.
Okay, if you're listening, we don't need another trilogy.
We just need Borondir's story.
One movie, a little extra long is fine.
Yeah.
That's what, can you, it would just be, like, he hasn't eaten for 15 days. He's gaunt. He's just like crawling through. Yeah, it'd
barely
be so
alive.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And then he just uses all of his remaining strength to blow the horn. It would have been, it'd be such a cool moment.
Yeah. One of the things that I really want to drive home is that this film just looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's got some really cool, expansive landscape shots. So if they shot, I'm not sure where they shot this, but if it was in the Czech Republic, I'd love to go there. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography and the editing are also top notch.
Back to the landscaping just a little bit. I loved how vertical this one went.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, you felt like you were kind of in the hills or like some low mountains, which is a totally sensible place to blow a horn. Like,
well, and it makes sense that it's the Vales of the Anduin, right? It's the beginning of the river valley.
Yeah. They're kind of just, it's seemingly right on the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
So they chose a great spot for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other things, costuming and weapons are really, really cool. Loved them.
Yeah, the fight scenes I noticed in this one were also really well choreographed. They were pretty brutal and they were really fun to watch. They were violent.
Yeah, Borondir. I hope this guy is now doing his own action movies because he was fucking cool. I really like that
kicking
guy.
Kicking some ass.
He's kicking some serious ass.
Well, it was a really smart choice to use men as the villains too, because you don't have to do any complicated orc makeup. I mean, we just talked about one of the Balkoth kind of looking orcish, but mm-hmm. I mean, half orc is easier to do than full orc.
I suppose, yeah. It's funny because me, you, and Joel agree on this, but Joe kind of dissents on this.
Like, it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
I just love seeing orcs get slaughtered. I know that sounds kind of fucked up, but it's just, I don't know.
Because you can do anything to them.
Right.
Yeah, and it's, you don't have to really feel bad because they're not human.
Right, exactly.
But no, I did enjoy the action scene, though, in this. It was very well done and well choreographed.
You know what I like about Borondir, too? Like any great action hero, in my opinion, he can take a fucking beating.
And he does.
He takes a beating in this fucking scene.
Yeah, they have a big variety of the different movements and things they do. Borondir even uses his sword hilt like a hammer, like flips his sword around, holds it in his hand, whacking him over
that
the head.
Cool.
Which we were talking about earlier, I was telling Trevor, is actually how medieval martial artists use swords in fights. You would have chainmail on your hands and you would spin the blade around and use it as a blunt, because the hitting blade on blade is a no-go in battle. It's going to shatter those blades and it's going to notch the swords, right? So back in those days, a lot of the times the back end of the sword was the more effective part of the weapon.
Blunt force trauma against maybe not so great armor is still going to impact and bruise, break ribs. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I wonder if these guys had some medieval martial arts background. I would be eager to see that. I wonder.
Maybe they need it in the Czech.
In the Czech Republic, yeah. It's still pretty fucking medieval out there, I guess.
Sorry, I don't have an issue with the Czech Republic.
None of us do. Yeah. None of us do.
Nonetheless, they did a fantastic job. I kind of want to go back and watch that fight scene in particular in like slow-mo.
Yeah.
Because it just felt very intricate.
I was trying to get my girlfriend's son to watch it with me for the third time earlier today. Because I was just like, I think he might kind of fucking dig this. And like, he's 8 years old. So I don't know. It might actually be a little bit too violent for him. I don't know. But yeah.
There's not that much blood.
Nah. Yeah, he's good. He'd be good. But yeah, I really like it. I might watch it again tonight. Super cool.
And it's only 15 minutes, man. That's not much of a commitment at all. Like,
God, the moment when the Aothage show up in this movie is also just so epic.
Yeah, even though they only had like four Aothage, they had like four riders, and they still made it epic as shit. Like when they kind of like, they're heavenly almost when they like ride up in like half motion.
They really look like Rohirrim, like, you know, Aothage. Like
the heroes. They
really fucking nailed it.
And the Ael the Young actor is cool, too.
I think it worked because they almost kind of played it off as like, this is a small party of, I don't know. It still felt epic. And you felt like there's probably a whole, you know, army of them over
somewhere
the hill.
Nearby.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you needed a party like the ones that.
You need Pelennor Fields.
Yeah. You don't need that.
Yeah. No, it was cool. And I just love how it ends with Ael and Borondir just embracing hands, and you know
they do the bro shake where they grab each other's forearms
by the forearms. The Legionnaire handshake.
Well, I love the tension they have in the middle of the conversation right before that too, because Borondir grabs his sword, which prompts the other guy to also grab his sword, and it's like,
which is so badass, he pulls it out of the dead Balkoth. Remember,
and then he sticks it right in the ground. It's like, no, this isn't violence, this is, oh, thank God you're here.
Like, exactly, he's like, no, I'm a comrade as well. What I am, exactly.
Yes, very well made movie.
They also used the line, Gondor calls for aid.
You know, oh, you classic. Have to. Yeah, you fucking have to, right?
Got
to
get that callback.
Yeah.
And I know earlier we were talking about the trials and tribulations that he had to go through in his journey, and while we didn't see many, I kind of enjoyed the intro where he has to stop because his horse can't continue.
And
like, he takes the time to like re-bandage and rest and stuff, and it's sad that he leaves the horse behind, because I think it died in the night, you know?
It did.
But it's, I mean, that's pretty much what we get, and I just like that. It's such a small scene, but I feel like it adds a whole bunch to what's going on, and it's different from what you might, I think, expect.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when Sam had to say goodbye to Bill.
Super sad, right?
Bill the pony.
Super fucking sad. It reminds me, weirdly enough,
Bill didn't die, but yes, he did have to say goodbye.
Yeah. Do you remember that movie Hidalgo with Viggo Mortensen?
Yeah.
There's that one scene when you think he's going to have to shoot the horse. Remember that? Oh, my God. Shout out to Hidalgo.
That was a pretty good movie, actually.
It was pretty good.
I have a question, actually, about the horse stuff, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I hate to, like, reference Rings of Power for something. Sorry.
Okay.
But there's a point where Isildur, his dad is, like, telling him about how important horses are and stuff to Numenoreans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing for Dúnedain? Would this horse have been kind of that?
I mean, Dúnedain, they're super learned and stuff, so they would have to be very good animal husbandrists or whatever the fuck you want to say. So I imagine they, like the Eldar who probably taught them, are pretty close with their steeds and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they're the most elf-like of any man, so if you can picture an elf doing it, the Dúnedain probably do it almost just as well.
Okay,
but not as well,
but you know, slightly lesser degree. Because of their mortality. Because
they'll die. They won't have enough time to perfect
their craft.
Don't
have enough time to perfect. Yeah, if you gave the Dúnedain enough time, they would definitely be the same. Yeah.
I feel like the Dúnedain would definitely be known for having horses.
Yeah.
But maybe not as well known as like the Rohirrim, the horse people.
No, they're all about that.
That's like, that's their life.
Mm-hmm. I just feel, I feel like Numenoreans would have a... like, because they have respect for the Valar, they would have respect for animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
The Alvar and the Kelvar, as it were, right? Another thing about this movie that was really great, the fucking music.
Oh, yes. The score on this one was beautiful.
Yeah, this is perfect for just a little one-off Tolkien history kind of piece. We really dug it.
Yeah, it fit. It really set the tone well.
Yeah, person that did the music is Peter, or Peter without a second E, Kubelik, shout out. Good job.
Good job, Peter.
Good job, Peter.
Good job, Peter.
Peter.
Way to go, Tolkien nerds in the Czech Republic, man. Way to do it.
Killing it. Just killing it.
What do they say these days? They slayed?
They slew.
They slew.
They slew, I believe.
They slew, I believe. Yeah. Well, let's just... This is final thoughts for the episode, guys. We're winding down here. Fan films. Really, really fucking cool.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed all three of these. Like, we may have had a least favorite of the three, but that doesn't mean we disliked any of them. We really loved these.
It's kind of like, you know, we each like the trilogy, but...
Right, you have a least favorite, right?
Well, yeah, we all know the Two Towers is the worst one.
Oh, my God. Don't... I'm trying to start this shit with me. Okay.
But we honestly wish there were more of these fan films around, and I don't know, maybe one day we'd like to make one.
Yeah, give to the Patreon. Yeah, we'd love to make a
help us fund film. Our own fan film.
Yeah, yeah, and this is the kind of shit that being a nerd is all about. It's crazy to see what you can do with a lot of love and a little bit of money.
And the love was evident in all three of these.
Totally,
there was palatable. A lot of love in all three of these.
Yeah, everybody was talented, cast, crew. Everything, it seemed like it came together for each one.
Mm-hmm.
The way, and like you couldn't tell, at least maybe with the Hunt for Gollum aside, but the other ones, you wouldn't really know that those were fan films if somebody didn't tell you.
No, mm-hmm. No. Yeah, no, my girlfriend was like, these were fan films. She was watching them with me earlier today, and she was like, it's just like, they did a really good job. And I was like, yeah, they should be fucking proud. Another thing to kind of finally ponder, if you could choose any Tolkien thing to have a fan film made about it, what would it be? My answer, because I like dark comedies, The Tragedy of Erenure and the Witch King.
Turn that into a dark comedy.
Gotta see it.
Didn't we do Minterd?
I'm Minterd about that. Yeah.
An extended version of Minterd. We sure did. I had a couple ideas that might be fun. I really like the idea of the coming of Tuor to Gondolin, because that would be one of those, I guess, in a similar vein to Horn of Gondor, where there probably wouldn't be any dialogue at all, actually, because it'd be just him and his journey.
I could totally see this as
an art piece, starting with the getting through the gate of the Noldor, and if you read the story, it starts off with a bunch of really beautiful descriptions of him going through the Rainbow Cleft and coming to the sea for the first time and experiencing like the birds there and like the waves, and it's really pretty. And then he meets his elf friend who helps bring him on a perilous journey through winter to get back to Gondolin. Like, I would love it if they didn't know each other's languages, but then they wouldn't have to talk again. We could just be like, they speak different languages, but they still know what they need to do.
The language of love.
The language of love.
They speak the language of love. Yeah, no, I would love to see that. I could totally see that as a kind of erdy little Tolkien piece. I could totally see that.
And then another thing would be The Fall of the Entwives. I'd love to see that pictured in a short film. That'd be really cool.
I could see that as a stop motion animated piece.
Yes. Claymation. Cool.
Claymation.
And then the last idea I had was The Lay of Nimrodel, which is just a fun little tale.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say fun. It's actually very
it's
sad.
It's very sad. Very sad little tale. It's not so fun. Yeah.
Okay. My turn. First question. Do I have to personally make this, or can I pay other people?
No, you lazy bastard. You have to make it yourself.
You are making this fan film.
But, well, you know what? You have to hire a crew for that, so I'll figure it out.
Yeah, you just got
to
delegate
it. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So my first two are kind of joke ones. Maybe it'd be fun to see a Hobbit stage play of the Anulindale.
Super cool.
That's very creative.
Love it.
Or like the secret origins of the Hobbits.
Oh,
like, we don't know where they came from, but that would just be some made up bullshit, so who knows. But my serious ones, I think it would be cool to see Balin and Company's story through Khazad Dûm.
Yes, which was covered a lot in the Return to Moria game.
Yeah, right? Moria happened. Happened afterward. All that had happened, and there were like clues and stuff left for you. So it'd be kind of cool to see. Because we know how it ends. Mm-hmm. So it'd be cool to see the journey and like what Khazad Dûm looked like in between those time periods.
Yeah.
And lastly, the first kinslaying.
Oh fuck yes, Trevor! Are you kidding
oh,
me?
Oh shit, that'd be metal.
I would love
as fuck.
To see a fucking. They should do like get somebody like a Takashi Miike, like a horror director,
okay,
to just do this and make it like, because people think elves are so nice and peaceful and blah blah blah.
Oh man, this shit was
brutal.
Watching them just fucking gut each other would be so fucking cool. I would love it.
Drowning each other
in
the bay.
Drowning each other and shit. Yeah. What about you, Joe? What do you want to see in a Tolkien fan film?
I feel like I have to say my Gollum baby eating origin story now is one.
Yes. Oh, sure. One. Yep. Why not?
I think it'd be awesome to see an epic Last Alliance of Men and Elves movie.
Totally.
Oh, we kind of got some of that in the Fellowship prologue, but I think it'd be sick to see it beginning to end.
Oh, yeah, a lot of stuff happened leading up to that.
We might get that in Rings of Power if they don't shit the bed.
Yeah, it sounds like they might be building up to that as maybe like a massive finale conclusion, but I don't know.
Hopefully they don't fuck it up.
Yeah, hopefully.
And then last one, I think a Witch King origin story could be really cool.
Yeah.
Rise and fall of a man getting corrupted by this ring and turning into the Witch King of Angmar would be interesting.
Super cool. I would love that.
You think he just woke up a pile of bones one day with the cloak on?
This is my new life now.
Yes. Also, as a final thought, support the arts, guys.
Yeah, make sure you're all going out and supporting the arts.
Yeah.
Local arts.
Give money to the arts if you can. Go see local plays. Check out local installations. Get involved in nonprofit and not-for-profit art projects if you can. Yeah, you can help us show the world that you don't need a whole lot of money to create good and passionate art. I was reminded of a Phil Oakes quote. In such ugly times, the only true protest is beauty. And I like to think that, not to tune our own horns or anything, but I feel like KOT kind of fits into that category just a little bit.
I'd say we're good art.
I hope we're good art. Fuck, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and hey, even Kate Madison said in her interview that you don't need a bunch of money and stuff to make a solid thing.
And take it from fucking Kate Madison, because she made Born of Hope, and that shit rules.
Shit was fucking awesome.
People said it was better than PJ, and if you get that high of praise, I don't care how much you hate those films, still good praise.
If you have a small community of people standing for you on Reddit, you're pretty cool. But yeah,
it's not necessarily always true.
I was gonna say I might regret saying that actually after I said it. Yeah. But what do we got coming up next week? Episode 98. Oh my god, so close to 100.
Oh, we're just getting inching closer and closer. So for next week, we got a Trevor original.
Trev dog.
Yeah, guys, we're gonna do the Lord of the Rings: War in the North video game review / overview.
Hell yeah, and that might have been one of those titles that you kind of missed.
Yeah, it came out at a pretty awful time for the competition anyway. Games like Skyrim and others were coming out. So
some big games.
It got passed over.
It didn't land very well in comparison, but that doesn't mean that it was bad.
No, and we're going to talk all about it. It's probably going to be how long? Three hours this long this time, Trev?
Maybe four?
No.
We make fun of Trevor because his episodes are long.
Because it's such an old game, there's not nearly as much dialogue.
Right.
Like, because games nowadays, you're going from point A to point B, there's a fucking whole bunch
of exposition.
Exposition and stuff, which is awesome, but old games didn't do that so much because, you know, they didn't have the resources, whatever.
Old games, right.
But there are some good, like, there are some good interactions, and the places and you go and the things you see are pretty cool. So I'll tell you guys all about that next week.
Next week, guys, Trev fans, tune in. But yeah, thanks for listening to KOT Podcast. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts and stay up to date on new episodes. And also, if you could rate us or give us a review, if you like us, that'd be real cool of you.
And as always, a big, big thank you to our patrons on Patreon. You guys help us so much. Subscribing on Patreon helps support us and gets you some exclusive content, so go check that out. That's patreon.com/KOT podcast. We also accept private one-time donations if, you know, Patreon payment subscriptions are not, you know, your speed. That's absolutely okay. Just contact us on your favorite social media and we will make that happen.
Speaking of social media, make sure that you come and find us on social media. In particular, Discord is one of the most fantastic places you can come and join our community, hang out, post memes, ask us questions. And, you know, once a year we get questions from everybody and do a drunk holiday special. It's an awesome, fun time.
Yeah. And you can find actually all four of us, including Jovaski, on the Discord. So if you want to talk to his weird ass as well as ours.
Thanks.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. You know, your weirdness is what makes me love you. You know that.
Thank you.
We are also available on TikTok at keep @KOTPodcast, we're still on X @KOTPodcast, Facebook @OfficialKeepOnTolkien, and Instagram @KeepOnTolkienPodcast. We also have a merch store at tmill, and that is keep-on-tolkien-podcast.tmill.com. And I know that's a lot to remember. So if you want, you can go to our website, keeponTolkien.com, which we just renovated and have out there. And there's a link to tmill. There's a link to all, a bunch of the places you can listen to us, and you can even see a picture of us all hanging out.
Hell yes, you can.
Check out the new KOT website.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, we were just checking it out earlier.
Yeah, we were just looking at it. Yeah, it looks legit.
But that's all from us, gang. I'm Danny J.
And I'm Joel N.
I am Trevor D.
I'm Joe Vasky.
We are...
Keep on Tolkien!
How are you, Tulaba?
You said Ents?
Oh, no. Get that shit out of here from last week.
The Ents puns are back.
Boo.
Are you not entertained?
Oh, no!
Oh, God.
Support the arts, guys. See you later.